Sale, and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. This Day in History, May 24th. On this day in 1844, inventor Samuel F.B. Morse taps out the words, "What hath God wrought?" in the first telegraph message, an event that revolutionized communications in America and around the world, transforming the landscape from one of slow transmission of messages and information to one where enormous amounts of data could be transmitted almost instantaneously over long distances. In 1846, U.S. General Zachary Taylor captures the city of Monterrey in the early stages of the Mexican-American War, a conflict which ended in the defeat of Mexico and the transfer of a huge swath of real estate, including portions of California, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, Nevada, Utah, and other regions, to the United States. This transfer, allowed by the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo at the end of the war, doubled the size of the United States, giving the nation immense amounts of natural resources that fueled the latter stages of the Industrial Revolution. And in 1883, a new landmark joins the New York City skyline, as the Brooklyn Bridge is opened by President Chester Arthur, the structure an important conduit for travel around the area, promoting trade and commerce, along with movement of people around the nation's largest city. Many people know the name Ernest Hemingway. He came on the literary scene in the 1920s with a bold, fresh style that caused critics to take notice and proclaim him as one of the brightest stars in the group of young authors emerging in post-World War I America. Hemingway's exploits are legendary. Bullfighting in Spain, big game hunting in Africa, deep sea fishing around Key West, Cuba, the Bahamas, and other regions. Although he passed from the scene in July 1961, his importance in the field of literature remains the focus of readers and scholars around the world. Only a few people who knew him personally are still around to tell their stories, but today's guest has a special link to Hemingway through his father. Raul Villarreal's father, René, was Ernest Hemingway's housekeeper in Cuba for many years. Hemingway spent roughly a third of his life in Cuba, from 1939 to 1960. He loved the area, its people, and the landscape. Hemingway captured many scenes of Cuba in his works, including The Old Man and the Sea, To Have and Have Not, and Islands in the Stream. Raul and his father even wrote a book about experiences with the author, titled Hemingway's Cuban Son. Raul is here with us today to tell us about his father's relationship with Hemingway, his love for Cuba, and its people. Raul, welcome to the show.
Gene, thank you for having me.
Well, you are an artist by trade. Tell us about your work and your style and influences.
Yes, I'm actually primarily a painter. I work oil and canvas and sometimes on wooden panels, but I also do drawings, digital art, sculptures. My work is representative, is realist in style, but it's also very autobiographical. I create a lot of imagery that relates to Cuba and issues of identity and immigration. And as you mentioned, I was born in Cuba, and at age 7, actually, the family, we moved to Madrid, Spain, and we lived there for 2.5 years, and then after that, we settled in Union City, New Jersey. And it is that kind of experience that motivates my art. And as far as influences, I would have to say that I really just love art in general, from the old masters to even the new conceptual art that's being created. But I would, you know, if I have to pinpoint one single artist or work of art that I love the most, it would be Diego Velázquez, Las Meninas. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that my father actually used to take me to the Prado Museum often to look at the paintings of Velázquez, but he preferred Goya, and that was because of his Hemingway days.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've heard the Prado is one of the greatest museums in the world. Tell us a little bit about the Prado.
Well, you know, as a young child, just imagine being able to admire all those great works of art, where you have a whole room full of Grecos, couple of years, and as I mentioned before, La Meninas was the painting that every time I went to the Prado, I had to stand in front of for several minutes and just stare at. Mm. And even to this day, I've been back to Spain. I've visited about 8 times, and I still go back to Prado and do the same thing.
Very interesting. You mentioned you were actually born in Cuba. Where were you born, and were you there when Hemingway was still there?
I was born in San Francisco de Paula, Havana, Cuba, basically about 4 blocks away from the Hemingway house, which is not a museum. And unfortunately, I was born 3 years after he passed away, so I did not know him personally.
Mm-hmm. I know a lot of the local street kids knew him because they liked to play in his yard and eventually ended up playing baseball, which I believe your father was part of that group, was he not?
Yes, it was actually in 1939 when Hemingway went to look at the property at the Finca Vigia. He was thinking of renting it, that he met my father, who was playing baseball with his brothers and some other friends from the Pueblo. And Hemingway struck a conversation with the boys, and he asked them, you know, what are you not playing inside that field in there? And they told him, well, you know, the owner doesn't let us do that. So Hemingway promised them that if he rented the house, he would allow them to play inside because they were playing on the streets. And eventually he rented the house, and Hemingway bought baseball equipment for the boys and allowed them to play inside his property, which he rented for a year, and eventually he bought a year later and lived there until 1960.
Interesting. You know, your father, I mentioned earlier, was Hemingway's housekeeper. I believe he was the last housekeeper that Hemingway had in Havana. How long was he his housekeeper? How long did they have a relationship there?
My father and Hemingway, again, they met in 1939, but it was not until 1946 that my father became the majordomo. Mm-hmm. The previous majordomo and the cook that they had, Ramon Juan, actually ended up having a fight. The majordomo had a gun and the cook had a knife, and that was in the middle of a lunch between that Mary and Hemingway were having, and eventually Hemingway fired the majordomo. And that's when my father told him, you know, Papa, I can do this job. And Hemingway gave him the job in 1946. My father was only 17 years old.
Very young to be stepping up to the plate with one of the old masters. So he was there with Hemingway for roughly 14 years up until 1960, correct?
Correct. And prior to 1946, what my father used to do for Hemingway was he would feed the cats and dogs at the finca and then run errands for the cook at that time, who was a woman named Maria. She was a Spanish cook. So, you know, from early on, my father was always just around the Finca Vigia, and to the point that Hemingway showed him how to box, showed him how to swim in the swimming pool, showed him how to shoot and fish. So he was like a kind of a really nice father figure to my father.
Yeah. Now, I know it's hard for you to know personally, but what did your father share with you about the closeness of his relationship with Hemingway? I mean, how close were they?
Well, it's interesting because when I was growing up in Cuba, there were all these photographs and books around the house of Ernest Hemingway, and I always kind of thought he was a grandfather I never met. And my father always referred to Hemingway as Papa. That was the way he referred to Hemingway. Heard him call him Ernest or Ernest Hemingway full name. It was always Papa. And he spoke so well and lovingly of this gentleman. And again, I kind of always thought he was somewhat of a grandfather figure, or a real grandfather.
Did your father speak much English?
No, he actually tried to learn English while he worked for Ernest Hemingway and Mary, but Papa was fluent in Spanish, and Mary Welsh also learned Spanish when she got to Cuba in 1946. And a funny story is that my father's youngest sister, Nilda, who was 9 years old, was Mary Hemingway's unofficial first Spanish teacher.
Oh, my gosh. Interesting. This is especially interesting to me because I just got back less than a month ago or so from a Smithsonian tour of Cuba, which was really outstanding. Our listeners probably know that I'm a huge Hemingway fan. In fact, he was the author who inspired me to start my writing career, and I mention him in one or two of my books. But the tour of Cuba was really superb. We visited five Hemingway sites, many of them on our own, apart from the group. But we did visit the Finca Vigía, which is Hemingway's home, now a museum. We also stopped at La Floridita, his favorite bar in Havana, which is extremely popular, as many people know. The Bodeguita, which I didn't actually spend any time there. I actually peeked inside, got a couple of photographs because it was early in the morning. We also went to Cohemar, where he was inspired to write The Old Man and the Sea, for which he won the Pulitzer Prize, quaint little fishing village, and also the Ambos Mundos Hotel, which is right in downtown Havana. They have preserved the room, it's room 511, where Hemingway stayed and wrote a few of his novels. I believe he wrote three of them, or parts of three of them there. So it was really a great experience, and having you on the show is wonderful, because now I've got another link to Hemingway. You never met him, but you visited the home a few different times. Tell us about your visit to the home.
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, my father, in 1962, a year after Hemingway's death, he started working at the Finca Vigía as a museum. That's when it actually officially opened as a museum in July 21st, 1962. My father kind of worked as an administrator and director of the museum. So as a young child, he would take me, when I was not in school, he would take me to the Finca Vigía, and he would ask me, you know, sit here until I'm done with this delegation, give them the tour of the house. So I often heard all the stories and would see him really just talk about his life with Ernest Hemingway to hundreds and hundreds of people a day. And for me, the house was just fascinating. It was really an amazing, magical place. And I think it's probably one of the reasons I'm an artist, is because of the time that I spent in that very creative environment.
Yes, for our listeners, if you've never been to Cuba but want to visit Hemingway's home, the Finca Vigía, it's just outside of downtown Havana. But one note, you can't get in. Unless you have some kind of a special connection with the museum director, which Raul does through his father, you can walk all the way around the house, peer inside. I think you can pretty much put your foot up on the doorstep, but you're not allowed to walk into the house. But I want to add that the views that you get of the house are excellent. You can see virtually everything that's worth seeing in the house. You can also walk down to the pool and to where he has his boat Pilar docked, you know, his well-known boat that he sailed all around the Gulf Stream. So, yes, you can visit the home, now a museum. Probably won't get in unless you have a special connection. And, yeah, you're right, Raul. It is a very special place. I mean, there's trophies and animal heads and paintings and books and kind of memorabilia and just a lot of things that take you back to the 1950s and 1960s. When Hemingway was still there in his later years. We are going to take a real brief break here, but stay with us. We're talking with Raul Villarreal, whose connection is with famous author Ernest Hemingway. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. I'm Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. Today, we're talking with Raul Villarreal, whose father was Ernest Hemingway's housekeeper for the last several years of Hemingway's life. Raul's father, Rene, was Hemingway's housekeeper from 1946 through the year he left Cuba in 1960. Raul, did your father have ongoing correspondence with Hemingway, letters, postcards, etc.?
Yes, Gene. As a matter of fact, Hemingway traveled a lot. And not only he went to Africa and Spain while he was in Cuba, he visited a lot the United States, eventually buying a property in Ketchum, Idaho. So whenever Hemingway was away, he would correspond with my father. My father was also instructed to send, to forward his mail to where he was. And boy, did Hemingway receive a lot of mail. He actually received mail twice a day. Mm-hmm. And so my father was in charge of forwarding the mail, and he would often write a letter, give him an update of what's happening at the Finca Vigia, and letting him know what the cats were doing, and mm-hmm. how, you know, probably Black Dog, his favorite dog, was missing Papa. Mm. And then eventually, a couple of days later, or a week or so, my father would receive a letter from Hemingway thanking him for forwarding the mail. And at times also, when he was in Spain with Mary Hemingway, they often sent postcards mm-hmm. of their travels. So there was mm-hmm. definitely a lot of correspondence between them.
Now, you mentioned the cats and the dogs that Hemingway loved to have around the house there and also in Key West. Were there many cats that lived at the Finca Vigia?
Yes. In the early days, it was really just about two cats. But my father counted that in 1960, by the time Hemingway left for the last time, the Finca, there were just a little bit over 50 cats.
Oh my God.
In the property.
Oh, my Lord. Now, I don't know if they have a little burial ground or cemetery for his pets. Is there one there? But I didn't see it when I visited.
There is a burial site for the dogs that's very close to the pool.
Mm.
And the cats also had a cemetery, but that actually is a secret that was between my father and Ernest Hemingway.
Oh, now, so it's not something that visitors would actually see if they are visiting there.
No, it's just really a secret place that they chose to bury their beloved cats.
Yes.
And Hemingway wanted to be present at all times. They usually did it in the mornings.
Yes.
And what's so interesting is that they had this ceremony where, you know, they would wrap the cat in the New York Times. That was the paper that Hemingway preferred to wrap his cats in, and then bury them in the morning, and then just our marked graves.
Interesting. Now, I know, not to digress too much, but I know that Boise was probably his favorite cat, and you see a lot of pictures of him and Boise. Is Boise buried somewhere on the property there?
Yes, he was. And he was his favorite cat. That was basically, it's interesting because Hemingway shared his time between Boise the cat and Black Dog, Blackie,
mm-hmm.
his dog. And so they each had their times. You know, Boise would be up on the table having breakfast, or I'm sorry, not breakfast, lunch or dinner with the Hemingways. And then Blackie was the one that would walk around the grounds and sit by his side whenever he read or slept a siesta.
Very interesting. I know that Hemingway absolutely loved his pets, and Boise and Black Dog, you're right. I think they were two of his favorites. By the way, for our listeners, if you've ever read Islands in the Stream, you'll see Boise mentioned. In fact, I believe there's a brief section where he says, "I don't know what I'd do without you, Boise, if I ever lost you." He really loved Boise the cat, and there are many pictures of him with that cat. If you haven't read Islands in the Stream, it is an outstanding book, one of my favorite Hemingway novels. In fact, I think it's a very underrated novel. I highly recommend it. It's superb. It's a side of Hemingway that most people never see. He's funny. He pokes fun at himself. He talks about life and thinking about experiences. It's just a great book. So highly recommend it if you haven't read it. How did your father get along with Hemingway and his wife Mary? I mean, obviously Hemingway was one personality, Mary was another. So tell us a little bit about that relationship.
Things that I remember my father often saying is that the Hemingways, Mary and Papa, they called their staff, you know, their Cuban family, and my father was their Cuban son. So they got along really, really well. My father remembers, you know, many happy times. There's always talk about the arguments and you know, this volatile relationship, but my father remembered a lot of many happy times at the Finca Vigia. You know, they lived, that was their Cuban paradise. They had this beautiful pool. They had this incredible state where people respected their privacy. And so, and Mary, actually, she referred to my father also as her Cuban son. So they had a really good relationship, and both Mary and my father made sure that Hemingway got the time he needed to write in the mornings. And, you know, the only person allowed in the room while Hemingway wrote was my father. And he was always there to make sure no one came in to disturb him until he was done with the writing about 12 midday or 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Very interesting. I also visited some other Hemingway sites, La Floridita, the Bodeguita, the Ambos Mundos, and Comar, which inspired The Old Man and the Sea. What's your favorite site among them, among those sites that I just mentioned?
Yes, besides the Finca Vigia, I would say that Cojimar is probably my favorite because I know that that's where Hemingway kept his boat. But also, I can imagine what it must have looked like in the 1940s and 50s as an old fishing village. It was probably just one of those wonderful places where you can sit and stare at the sea, and maybe you were lucky one day you would see the Pilar pass by, you know. So the Cojimar is definitely my favorite out of those other places.
Cojimar is just such a quaint fishing village, and my favorite site there is La Terraza, which is just a great bar and restaurant right on the edge of the water there. Anybody who's read The Old Man and the Sea will see it mentioned as The Terrace. But it is just a wonderful bar and restaurant. As you walk into La Terraza, which is known for its seafood, by the way, you see Hemingway everywhere. You see paintings, some sculptures, sketches, photographs, several original oil paintings, which are just superb, above and around the bar. And then when you walk into the back room, you see the restaurant area where his table is preserved. It's right in the corner. It's looking out towards the sea. And it's just an absolutely lovely spot. We were there for, I believe, our next to our last night in Cuba. And with the Smithsonian group, we had a couple of people from the group join us. But we were just so blessed to have a spot right next to Hemingway's table. Somehow the bar or restaurant manager must have known that we wanted to be near Hemingway. So he put our table literally right next to Hemingway's table. I walked up to it, got several photographs, and it's just a great place. The Old Man in the Sea, of course, his novella about an old fisherman who fights the good fight. It's just a terrific story. A lot of people know that among his best-known works. And I think that it reflects his love not only for Cuba, but for the people of Cuba. And tell us a little bit about why you think Hemingway loved Cuba so much and the people there so much.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Hemingway, you know, after Key West, Hemingway loved Key West, but what he found in Key West is that he was too famous and he was being distracted constantly. So he found Cuba, and he could still fish in the Gulf Stream, which, you know, Cuba facilitated that. I think the mixture of the Cubans being, they have this Spanish customs and Spanish background, and then also with the African influence, just made the island really interesting for him. And I've heard even an interview in Spanish where he's speaking to a reporter, and he talks about how he really loved and admired the honesty and nobility of the Cuban fishermen and the Cuban people. And for him, I think that was very important. You know, those were the kind of characters he loved to write about. So, yeah, I think, that, you know, he fell in love with the island and its people. Yeah, and that culture just really, he wanted to be Cuban. He said it in that interview, you know, I am a Cuban mutt. And this is something he said in fluent Spanish.
Yes, I could sense his link with the Cuban people when we were there. The Cubans are very proud people. Although many of them are poor, or certainly without resources as we would consider in the United States, they're very proud, very happy people. And they have a tough life compared to others around the world, but still they remain positive and optimistic. I think Hemingway liked that. I think he also liked the fact that the Cuban fishermen are very hardy souls. I mean, these guys go out and fish with their hands and the old rope nets and things like that. And, you know, that's not something that you see today. But these gentlemen were very strong, very hardy souls. I think Hemingway really liked that. And I do have one question. Because he loved Cuba so much, why do you personally believe that he left Cuba in 1960?
Well, in 1960, by that time, the political climate on the island was changing rapidly. There started to be an anti-American sentiment on the island, and even though that Hemingway probably was not going to be bothered because he, you know, the Cuban people loved him. He had been there since 1939. He had helped so many Cubans from the Pueblo and other places financially, and also just really, with the writing of The Old Man and the Sea, he did so much for the island. But I understand, you know, the truth is he was getting a lot of pressure from the American embassy, being such a high-profile individual, and for him to stay in Cuba with the changing political climate was definitely something that was not looked upon favorably. Mm-hmm. And he realized that. And, you know, after all, he was an American. And he loved the United States, so he did what he had to do.
Now, did your father maintain contact with Hemingway after he left the island and went to Idaho?
Yes, actually, they spoke on the phone often. Hemingway wanted to make sure that the cats, the dogs, and the finca, everything was fine. You know, he left his 9,000 books behind. You know, a writer's home is where you find his books, so he still had all the books behind.
Was Boise still alive when he left?
No, Boise had passed away already.
Okay.
And Black Dog also.
Yes.
So
that's good that they actually did maintain some contact. You know, the Cuban people still love Ernest Hemingway, 56 years after he passed away. Why do you think Hemingway had such a huge impact on Cuba?
I think it definitely, The Old Man of the Sea was serialized in Bohemia magazine in Spanish pretty soon after it was published in the United States. And I think the Cuban people loved the way he portrayed the fishermen that portrayed the island. Hemingway himself, you know, the Nobel Prize medal, he donated that to a church in Santiago de Cuba for the Virgin of Cobre. He was always very given to the Cubans, and I think the Cubans also reciprocated that love.
Yes. I did see some images of the Virgin de Cobre, which is a very special soul. It's the equivalent of our Mother Mary while I was visiting there, and in fact we bought a few of those images. We're just about to finish up, but I just want you to tell our listeners about your book, Hemingway's Cuban Son, and how they can buy it if interested.
Yes, actually, Hemingway's Cuban Son can be purchased in Amazon through online. It was published by Kent State University Press, and you do have the hard copy you can purchase, or there's also the electrical version.
Excellent.
The electronic version that
Very
you can
good.
Purchase. And I'm proud to say that it was actually, in 2009, it was a finalist in the memoir category for the Independent Book Award.
Excellent.
And, you know,
Excellent.
It's my first book that I wrote about my father's anecdotes, and I'm very proud that I was able to get it published and for him to see it.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Raul. It is an excellent book, and really appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Thank you all for tuning in today to Living History.